Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's show, Colorado has the largest number of immigrants that are claiming sanctuary in faith-based organizations and churches. This weekend, an event takes place in Boulder to honor the women who are in sanctuary in local churches. Local state representatives will read the stories written by these women. It's an effort to put a human face on the broken immigration system. And it's a project of Modus Theatre and their Undocumerica project. Then, Colorado author Renee Linnell has just written a new memoir about how she escaped a cult. She'll be speaking in Boulder later today. Leland Rucker joins us with the latest news in cannabis. Then, after headlines from the BBC, it's time for a supersized edition of Radio Nibbles. John Lendorf will be live in the studio with some very special guests and some very special thank you gifts for people who show their support for KGNU. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Hannah Lee Myers.
Wednesday, U.S. Supreme Court Justice John Roberts posted a letter announcing the ethics complaints filed against Justice Brett Kavanaugh in relation to his conduct during his confirmation hearings will be handled by Denver's U.S. Circuit Court. Westward reports that specifically the chief judge of Denver's 10th Circuit will handle the complaints over Kavanaugh's statements, but legal analysts are saying it's unlikely that Chief Justice will ultimately come down hard on Kavanaugh, both because he was also on Trump's shortlist of Supreme Court justice nominees and because the complaints may be considered moot now that Kavanaugh has already been confirmed to the Supreme Court. Broomfield has filed a lawsuit against the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission over a drill pad spacing issue. Here with more, here's Rod Bruski.
The Broomfield Enterprise reported that the city of Broomfield filed a complaint in Denver District Court on October 2nd, saying the COGCC struck down, stating the city's exhibits addressing health, safety, and environmental concerns were irrelevant. Broomfield claims the COGCC exceeded its authority and abused its discretion and failed to allow due process rights over a proposed Crestone Resource drilling pad site. The Gotoll site original application was for one well, but was increased to 32 wells by the COGCC. Next Tuesday, Colorado Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in the Martinez case, which seeks to have state regulators give priority to the public health, safety, and welfare in granting oil and gas permits. For KGNU, I'm Rod Bruski.
Colorado's largest medical insurer, Kaiser Permanente, is pointing to the spike in medical prices in the state as the reason the company has lost $65 million over the last 3 years. The Denver Post reports Kaiser is planning a thorough review of hospitals' practices and their healthcare costs in Colorado and plans to confront hospitals they claim have refused to enter into reasonable contracts with Kaiser and engaged in non-competitive practices that increase prices for patients. The new president of Kaiser Permanente Colorado says it's possible the insurance company will file antitrust lawsuits against some Colorado hospitals over the issue. This comes after a Denver Post investigation found that Colorado hospitals increased prices by 76% between 2009 and 2016 and have built expensive new hospitals on a greater scale than almost anywhere else in the nation. Expect a high today around 44 degrees, low tonight somewhere around 36. We do have a freeze warning in effect through 9 a.m. High temperatures on Friday and Saturday will be in the 50s, but then we'll get to a high of only around 30 degrees on Sunday with another chance for snow that day as well. It's currently around 34 degrees on the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Hannah Lee Myers.
It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. there are more immigrants in sanctuary in Colorado than in any other state. These are people who fear deportation and feel there are no other options for them. This Sunday at Etown Hall in Boulder, Modus Theatre presents a unique event featuring some of the women who are in sanctuary in Colorado. They'll bring to the stage Women of Resolution, featuring the stories of four Colorado women who are currently in sanctuary. And because these women can't leave sanctuary to read their own stories or go to the state legislature to advocate for their rights, their stories will instead be read by members of the Colorado House of Representatives. I spoke with Laura Pinochet, who's the project manager for Undocu America, which is a project of Modus Theatre, which amplifies the voices of undocumented leaders in the community, and the Sanctuary Series project, which is one of the components of Undocu America. She knows some of the women in sanctuary, and Laura's also directly impacted by the ongoing mess that is the federal immigration policy. That's because she's a DACA recipient. That's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, instituted by Obama and repealed by Trump. I asked Laura what makes this Sunday's event so important.
I think there's a lot of misconceptions and lies about who the undocumented population is. And I can understand how American citizens would be afraid of undocumented Americans, given the picture that they've been painted of that we would be, you know, a danger to this country. And I can see how they believe that deporting people would make this country somehow safer. But I don't think that people realize that most of undocumented immigrants are undocumented, not because of some not because they're trying to be, you know, undercover or part of some terrorist group or part of some gangster group that's trying to harm the community. But we are really hardworking people who are just trying to provide for our families. And I do believe that when American citizens look at these stories and they feel what the women as mothers are experiencing, I think they would have a shift in their opinion because they haven't seen this side of the story. And I think anybody who would listen to the words of these women, it's hard not to want to do something about changing this system that's putting them in this hard position of having to make this decision of going into sanctuary, because there are some details in the stories that explain how, even though, you know, we can pay thousands of dollars towards a lawyer to try to fix our status, the way immigration law is set up, it doesn't allow people to fix their status. So therefore, it's not our fault that we're in this position. It's the way the immigration law is set up. So if people could understand that, I think they would maybe have a change of mind or heart.
Well, I know that the event will end with a call to action from the American Friends Service Committee and Faith in Action. What do you hope will come as a result of this?
I hope that people can see that, you know, I think that a lot of times this immigration debate can be so overwhelming. It can feel like it's such a hard thing to change and that it's almost impossible to get some, you know, find a solution for it. But we hope that this call to action can really inspire people to get involved and see that it's not, you know, it's not that difficult to make a call to your legislator or to your senator. I think that giving them these tools that are very accessible, I think can make a difference, especially the People's Resolution, which is something that you endorse, and it's very easy to share with people and get other people to endorse. And if we just follow the lead of these women and do our part, I think we can achieve something. But we just have to, first of all, we have to understand that we do need to do something, because not doing anything has just getting us, it's just making everything worse. So a lot of people who have been just on the side of this issue, just watching it grow, but not really doing anything, we hope that they can understand that there's something they can do, and it's not difficult at all. It's very accessible.
And just as we finish, Laura, just explain exactly what the People's Resolution is all about.
The People's Resolution it creates a path to citizenship to parents of American citizen children. And as you see, the women who are in sanctuary, they're mothers. Three of them are mothers, and they don't want to leave their American citizen children behind, and they also don't want to take them away from their home country. A lot of us are not able to fix our status because of the law that criminalizes immigrants who cross the border unlawfully. So that gives us a 10-year bar. If you want to fix your status, you have to leave the country and wait outside of the country for 10 or 20 years. So this is not an accessible way to fix status, especially for a parent who has to be here to take care of their children. That's why we want to repeal this law, and that's what the People's Resolution would do.
That's Laura Pinochet, who's the project manager for UndocuAmerica, which is a project of Modus Theatre. Well, this Sunday's Women of Resolution event will feature the words written by four Colorado women who are in sanctuary, including Ingrid Encalada Latorre. And her story will be read by State Representative Jonathan Singer.
Until last night, I truly believed I had made peace with the difficult decision to be deported to Peru, taking my two sons with me and splitting our family. I was too tired to keep fighting and face the long-term prospects of sanctuary. I was hopeful I'd find a way to start a life over again. But then I realized, the reality started to hit. Bryant, my older son in fourth grade, was crying and begging me not to go and to force him to leave our home and his school. You see, it's not just me. Like it was when I came to the U.S. when I was a teenager. Now it's my two kids, who are both U.S. citizens, and thinking about taking them back there, away from their country. I didn't finish my degree. I don't have a profession or a way to start from zero, and there's not really anything more than sustenance I could provide them. My aunt, who recently returned from Peru, shared with me the devastating poverty the country is facing in the aftermath of Venezuela's economic crisis. And well, it may seem like a small thing to you, but Anibal, my two-year-old son, has a bad cold, and there's no health clinic where my family lives in Peru. No place to take him if he needs a doctor. No. I decided I have to be strong and do what's best for my children. I must choose sanctuary so I can fight for them and for my community.
That's Representative Jonathan Singer reading the words of Ingrid Encalada Latorre. And Ingrid can't read the words herself because she's currently in sanctuary and she's not able to leave sanctuary. Jonathan, you're a state legislator. For you, what is that like for you, knowing the situation of these women in sanctuary, but then to actually read the words in that kind of a way? Does it have a different impact?
Well, this really forces me to think about this not as a legislator, but as a father. And you know, as a parent, and I look at these words and I think about what Ingrid has been through, and I ask myself, what would I do if I were in her shoes? And I come to the conclusion that I would be in the same place that she would be today.
Have you spoken to her personally?
You know, I've spoken to her personally, and her son that she talks about, Anibal, her son who's two and my daughter who are three have played together. They've related to each other in a way that forces me to relate to Ingrid not just as a lawmaker and as a policymaker, and as just a generic parent, but as somebody who is the parent of a playmate now.
Give us a sense what it is like to live in Sanctuary from your experience visiting with Ingrid.
Well, it's a step above jail, and it's, a step above what most people would maybe think it is, where it's a, cloistered, segregated life, mostly because there's been an outpouring of support from our community. But once again, I put myself, in a parent's shoes on something like this. If my daughter wanted to go to a park, or if my family wanted to just have a night out on Pearl Street, that's not something she can do. And how does she explain that to her son?
That is State Representative Jonathan Singer. He's one of the lawmakers, one of the members of the Colorado House of Representatives that will be reading the stories of four Colorado women who are currently in Sanctuary. And he's going to read the story of Ingrid Encalada Latorre, who's in Sanctuary here in Boulder. And this is part of the Women of Resolution event, a presentation by Motus Theatre happening at Eaton Hall in Boulder this coming Sunday at 2 p.m. Now, in addition to the stories of the women who are in Sanctuary, there'll also be award-winning slam poet Dominique Christina, who will be performing her work as well. And I asked Dominique, what is the power of art to explain some of these complex issues like immigration?
I believe that art is provocation. I believe that its function is to rattle the cage and interrupt space and wake people up. I believe that poetry in particular curates language that gets you closer to the truth, which is completely antithetical to politics, which I think curates language that creates the lie. I am interested and invested in interrupting space. I'm interested and invested in centering the stories of those who have been in the margins, myself included. I'm interested in rescuing folks who deserve to be rescued. I'm interested in rescuing myself over and over again. So art is an act of provocation, and in that regard, it's the perfect vehicle to try to suss out these kinds of critical conversations about who we are as human beings, how we are functioning in the world right now, what the state of the world is right now, what the urgent conversations are right now, and what medicine needs to be offered to fix all of our disease.
Well, Dominique, what can people expect now at this performance on Sunday?
They should expect to be moved and probably triggered and maybe interrupted and hopefully inspired and hopefully enlightened and more informed, and they should expect to touch the better parts of their nature. They should expect to have a humanizing experience. We're not just humanizing these women. We're humanizing the audience, too. We're trying to shift their perspective.
Award-winning civil rights slam poet Dominique Christina will be performing at this event that's happening at Eaton Hall in Boulder on Sunday. It's Women of Resolution, and it's a project of Modus Theatre and their Undocumerica program. And it is all happening from 2 to 4 p.m. You can find out more at modustheatre.org. It is happening at Eaton Hall in Boulder. Once again, it's Sunday, October 14th from 2 to 4 p.m. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU, and a huge thank you to everyone who's called in this morning, including Jamie from Boulder, who gave this morning, says KGNU is a great source of education. Debbie in Morrison also gave, saying that I love all of what KGNU does. Thank you, Debbie. And Anonymous also gave this morning. Anonymous loves Democracy Now. Thank you so much. 303-449-4885 is that number to contribute if you support local news programming here on KGNU and having a community forum where we can talk about issues that affect all of us in the community, but particularly those who've been marginalised. Issues like the broken immigration system. Won't you show your support by calling 303-449-4885? Well, Renee Liddell from Snowmass, Colorado, escaped a cult that she was part of for 7 years. Her journey began at what she thought was a meditation seminar back in 2006 in California. It was led by a charismatic guru, but Linnell was slowly brainwashed and sucked into what she says was a cult. She's written about her experience in her new memoir. It's called The Burn Zone.
I didn't know what to expect, and I got there late. And this is actually how I opened the book with this experience. There was a seat in the front row. And I was expecting an older woman with long gray hair and a robe and mala beads, and out walked this gorgeous woman in what looked like an Armani business suit, black with stiletto heels. And she said, "Let's meditate." And I was expecting spa music, and she put on loud techno from The Matrix. And I looked at her and I thought, wow, she's so polished. I want to be like her. And then I closed my eyes and I felt this energy shoot up my spine, out the top of my head, and I disappeared. And the world disappeared and everything went white, and this overwhelming peace just exploded inside my mind. And I thought, this is what I've been searching for. I don't even know what it is. I don't know who this woman is. I don't care. This is what I've spent my entire life searching for. I'm home.
But then what happened? Because that was initially a very positive experience that you had. Then
yes,
you got further and further engaged with this organization.
Yes. And I parallel it to any toxic relationship, where if a woman goes on a first date with a man and he hits her or verbally abuses her, she's not going on a second date. But the abuse comes insidiously over time. And in this situation, the group really romanced me. I felt this incredible peace. And then she went on to say that in the East, people have these beautiful spiritual practices, but they're poor. And in the West, people have these great careers, but they're soul sick. And what she was going to teach us was to sharpen our minds through meditation and then use our career as our spiritual practice, making every moment an offering to the divine. So we would make more money. We would create lives that helped us meditate better because we'd be living in nicer spaces and not worried about bills. And then eventually we would give back to the world through philanthropy. So she coached us in our careers. She gave us amazing tasks like get a black belt in karate. I became a computer programmer with a background. I was just a dancer, and suddenly I'm making money computer programming. So she built us up for a couple years. And
I mean, that all sounds very positive. As right. You said, you've developed a new career, you got new skills. It was all a very positive experience. But when did things start to change and impact you negatively?
That was about 2 years in, maybe a year and a half in, because I'm an A student and I do everything to the best of my ability and extreme. And so I became one of her best students. And then I started running her company, and I was studying computer programming, and I was training for karate. So this was 2 years in. So
what was her company? Because this group was the University of Mysticism. Was that the company or?
Well, I changed the names because I wanted to make my story about wholeness and not revenge. But her company was pitched to us as a personal professional development company. So she built us up, but by building us up with all these tasks, she manipulated our time. So all of our time was spent doing things for her, which meant, one, that we were exhausted, we were sleep deprived, and that our support structure was slowly taken away because there was no more time for friends and family and activities that we loved. And so once the support structure was gone and we were exhausted, then she introduced the self-doubt, saying that in Buddhist mysticism, you sand away the ego so you can become enlightened. And so she started pointing out all of our flaws.
You made an analogy earlier to domestic abuse, and this pattern sounds very much like that in terms of initially really pouring love on somebody before then it becomes abusive. But really what struck me from your story is the whittling away of your support.
Yes.
Groups taking you away almost from friends and family who could offer a different perspective, and then undermining your own self, I suppose, in many ways. I mean, what would tell us more about what that was doing to you personally?
Well, it happens so slowly. And again, like any toxic relationship, you don't realize it's happening. And because it happens slowly over time. And then those of us that are drawn to a group like this or a toxic relationship tend to be codependent, I was raised by an alcoholic, abusive mother. So I just wanted so desperately to be loved and approved of. So I'm doing all of these tasks to be approved of. And when I got the love and reinforcement, it was intoxicating. And then when it got taken away, I thought, oh, I did something wrong. I wasn't a good student. I misbehaved. You know, the little girl in me comes out through the 33-year-old woman saying, please just tell me I'm special.
Renee Liddell will talk about her new memoir, The Burn Zone, this Saturday at 2 p.m. at Barnes & Noble in Boulder. Leland Drucker is the senior editor at Cincy Magazine, and he joins us on Thursday mornings to talk about the latest news in cannabis. Today, we're taking a look at the connection between beer and cannabis and some new research that's showing an unlikely connection.
Yeah. In the October issue, in the current issue of Cincy, I write about the crossroads between beer and cannabis. It's getting kind of crowded out there. Keith Villa, the man who created and sold the popular Blue Moon beer label, very popular beer, he's brewing a beer here right now in the Denver area that will have all the alcohol extracted and replaced with cannabinoids, terpenes, and flavonoids. So it'll be the beer taste and the cannabis high. So there's all this kind of stuff going on. He's not the only one. The Canadian conglomerate Constellation Brands, the corporate overlord of Corona and Modelo beers, owns a $3.9 billion stake in Canopy Growth, which is the largest grower of cannabis in Canada. So there's all this stuff going on. Beer companies are starting to get involved in it. And the Canadian market is going to be open this month, and that's going to just open up things even more.
So that's beer being artificially infused with cannabis. But there's also research coming out that actually some of the components that we're most familiar with in cannabis, that's actually naturally occurring in beer.
Yeah, I actually talked to a gentleman named Dr. Bomi Joseph, and he's a doctor, and he was looking for some kind of help in cancer. He was looking for something that would help cancer, and he found out about CBD. And he found out that CBD, of course, in the United States is very difficult to get because it's illegal. So,
but only in certain states. It's
right,
legal in Colorado.
Right, but it's very hard to find. So he decided that he would look into the idea of finding CBD in something besides cannabis, and he found it in hops. Now, hops and cannabis belong to the same group, Cannabaceae. That's the same genetical group. So they're very similar. And he was looking for something that would have a positive effect on liver cancer cells, and he couldn't find it here in the United States because all of the hops in the United States are grown by beer companies. And they're patented, and they have their own, you know, this is exactly the way they want it, and that's what happens. So in order to find feral hops, he had to go to the Silk Road regions of India and Mongolia, and he spent 7 months over there just finding species of hops. And what he found was that there was THC in some of these hops plants, and there was CBD in some of these hops plants. Now, this is something that we've never heard of before, and he thinks it's kind of nutty himself, even with just talking to him about it. But he came back with plenty of specimens, including some that contained THC, which he just discarded. He wasn't really interested. I'm sure there are other people who might be interested in that. But he came up with an oil coming from hops that's 18% CBD. He's applied for a patent for real scientific humulus oil. It'll be the first non-cannabis CBD oil on the market, and it's for sale right now. And he says, you know, that the connection between hops and cannabis is not really that real. You know, yes, they found that, but it's more of a marketing term than anything else. But it is something different. And it's something that I'm sure more research is going to bring us a lot more. We're going to find out a lot more about it.
And where is that researcher based?
That researcher is based in California. Dr. Joseph is based in California. And you can find his oil for sale on the web.
People can read more about the connection between beer and cannabis online at scentsymag.com. Leland Rooker joins us Thursday mornings. Thanks, Leland.
Thank you.
And a big thank you to everyone who has been calling in this morning. That number is 303-449-4885. So many people are calling in to support local community radio, local community media, and a local community institution. So we welcome you and we thank you. And now we invite you, if you've yet to call, that number is 303-449-4885. Be that next caller. And particularly during this next segment, because it is our membership drive, a very special Radio Nibbles ahead.